Hello, everybody, and welcome to eTech Muddy Boots, where we don't just talk about it, we stomp right through it. I'm your host, Melissa, and this is the show that gets down and dirty with everyday leaders who are making real change happen. We're not afraid to get our boots muddy because that's where the real stories are. So lace up, slip them on, step out, and join us as we trudge through the trenches of trust building and action taking, real action taking. If you are tired of all the talk and no walk, you're in the right spot. So let's get your boots ready. Let's lace up. Let's get muddy. Hello and welcome to today's episode of eTech's Muddy Boots. If you're looking for help if you're a real leader looking for real help from real people who have really stomped through the mud, then you're in the right place. If you're that type of leader that likes to keep your little shoes clean and walk on the concrete on the side and talk about issues and not really walk through issues, you're in the wrong spot. But if you are a type of leader who has to pull people out of the mud, who walks through the trenches, who does not run away or run around difficult times, difficult conversations, and difficult situations, then guess what? You're in the right spot. And you are going to enjoy today's podcast because we are talking about how to lead through a crisis. So get your little pencil, get your favorite drink, whatever you got. And this is where you stomp through the mud with us. We're not afraid to stomp through the mud. And I'm very excited about today because the faces you see on the screen, you're going to see a gentleman named Chris Bazile. You're going to see a champion named Garland Hawk, and you're going to see Guru Maditya. Did I say that right, Guru?
Maditya.
I'm working on my enunciation with my East Texas Southern accent. So that Chris loves to make fun of, but Garland, he feels me when it comes to that. But these gentlemen are exactly the way I opened up this segment today. These gentlemen I have watched recently and multiple times walk through the mud. They have genuine mud on their boots. They're not talk-abouters. They're do-abouters. And so when I was thinking about three gentlemen to put on this podcast today that would help you to lead through a crisis, you are not going to avoid a crisis. Do you guys hear me? You are going, if you're not in a crisis, you've either left a crisis or you're about to go through a crisis. That's what I've always been taught. And these gentlemen are experienced. They have went through the mud. They're either standing in the mud. They've helped pull people through the mud. And on a few occasions, they've been pushed in the mud. So if you find yourself in any of those situations, then you're in the right spot. And I have some questions for them. So welcome, guys. Welcome, Chris, Garland, and Guru to the eTech Muddy Boots podcast.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, I have some questions that I know that are going to help me. It's going to help everyone who listens because this is for people that want to learn, right? And we want to grow. So if I can just kind of kick off with some questions, are you guys ready? Here's the first question. The second question, actually. In a crisis, decisions often have to be made fast. Sometimes you don't really have all the information that you need to make the decision. How do you decide, let these leaders know, the ones that are listening, how do you decide what to prioritize when everything feels like it's urgent? Okay, so I'm going to start with Guru. What would you tell us? How do we learn to prioritize when everything feels urgent?
To start off with, I'd like to say is that practice makes men perfect and men, women are perfect. So to act in crisis, you've got to make decisions quick because you've got to get into the practice how to handle crisis. So make sure you're starting to learn to make decisions quick and fast. Once you master that, now you're ready to tackle crisis. Now, while you're practicing that, to make decisions quick, you also are not just making decisions. Practicing quick decisions means prioritizing what is required first or together or multiple decisions. That's what it means for quick decisions. So while you're trying to solve the crisis, you've got to prioritize the decisions that this is what we will start off with immediately. Okay. And then we'll take a step by step. Now, the other thing is that make sure you repeat your decision making quick and fast. So let's say at this hour, I made 5 decisions to solve the crisis. Come back after an hour again to again prioritize your decisions. You see?
Oh, okay.
Decision making does not mean that you only meet once and you only make decisions at that moment. No. At that moment, make your decisions, put up your plan, and then come back after hour, couple of hours, or depends upon the crisis situation. That would always help you in alternating your priorities and taking care of urgent crisis.
Hmm. I like that. I like that your decision right then may not be final. What do you think about that, Garland? What do you like about that, and how would you add to it?
He's 100% correct.
Yeah.
You make a decision. Guru and I made a decision Thursday, Friday. I believe it was Thursday. We made a decision based off of the information that we had at hand at that time and what we felt like was the best decision for us at that time. And, you know, it worked out in our favor. But if it had not worked out in our favor, we would have gone back and looked at it and rediscussed it. And we may have made a different decision. But you're going to make your decisions in situations like that based off of your past, what's worked, what hasn't worked. So that experience is going to help you make that decision. You know, one other time that I remember that we had to make a decision, Chris, you remember this, the incubator site in Jamaica. That was a horrible day. The system was down. The power was down. We couldn't get in the door. They wasn't going to let us in the door. What do? Our hands are tied. I made a decision. I may have been a little bit rattled when I made that decision because I'm used to being able to kind of have at least one piece of a control. That day I had none. I made a decision and I made it quick. You know, and it did. It worked out for us in the long run, but I had to step back after that and I had to look at how that particular incident affected me, how I acted, how I led the team, and the decision that I made at the time. Was I right? And I do those things.
I love that each one of you already, Guru and Garland, neither one of you have even contemplated that you weren't going to make some sort of decision. You see how I mean by you guys just run through the mud? You don't like clean your shoes off and figure out a way to let someone else? What do you think about, Chris, what Garland and Guru have said?
Good. I mean, couldn't be more agreement. I mean, the first thing I think of when you're faced with that is, you know, when you're on a plane and they always remind you, put your oxygen mask on first. And that's what you have to do. You have to be able to assess the situation. You can't just go out there and, you know, do something that's going to make it worse. You got to ask yourself a couple questions. Is this going to cause permanent damage if we don't fix it in the next hour? You know, what's going to happen? Will this get materially worse if I hold off on my decision to address something? Can anyone else handle this without me? And, you know, just like you watch some of those battlefield movies, they don't treat the loudest patient first. They triage, right? They find out who needs immediate attention because without it, someone could die. And not that we're saying the same thing is going to happen here, but you have to assess who's our red tags, who's our yellow tags. And again, I just got off of another call where, Melissa, you even talked about this last week, 70 and go, right? Even if I have 70% of the information, that's better than waiting and stalling for me to get 100% and have the perfect solution. It's never going to happen. You got to work sometimes with incomplete information and just go forward and get it done.
Yeah. And I believe I wouldn't want a doctor that was treating a triage that would not want to make a decision unless they had 100+. Do you know what I'm saying? Because then patients are dying. And that's, guys, that's this, what you're saying is the same thing in business. And, you know, to that question, it says, how do you decide when everything feels urgent? Well, you've just laid that out, you know, and I love when you said, is this going to cause permanent damage if I don't do X or if I do X? So, and that kind of ties back to what Guru was saying is we may have to make this decision this hour,
right?
Loop back around in another hour and make another decision, right?
And,
so I think that is crystal clear what you guys have said. All right, on to my next question. So I hope everybody's taking notes fast because these guys are running through it and I appreciate it. And you see the intensity on their face. This is why I asked these three to be here, because they're in the mud, right? They're in the mud. They're showing you, if you could pick up the phone and call any of these three, they've probably been through a similar crisis that you're going through right now. So
Melissa, real quick, if you didn't hear, Garland's got five fires burning in his little,
I heard it.
Little horns going off.
I heard the whistle's going off. So he's in the battlefield.
There's decisions that need to be made. Yeah.
Yeah. When I talk, Garland's got mud all over him. He bless him, he stays in the mud.
Exactly. Okay. Quit. I swapped my boots out in 2025. I am now wearing hip waders.
Hip waders. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Not snake boots anymore. You went straight to hip waders?
I went to hip waders. The mud has gotten too deep in 2025.
Be careful, because those get holes in them easily, you know. They leak easily when you snag them. I know a thing or two about hip waders. We'll do that on another podcast. All right. Here's the other question. I'm going to gear this question. So I'm going to start with Guru again, and then you guys build on it like you just did. And then I'll gear some questions to you individually. Guru, what is one leadership challenge that you face during a major crisis? And what is some specific mindset or something that Guru did to help him work through it?
So when it comes to crisis and decision-making and managing both these things together, the major challenge which I face or I have faced is not having enough data or details to make a decision. Now, let me tell you, the underlying statement is make a decision.
Yep.
When you're solving crisis, make a decision. Now, when you've got to make a decision, right or wrong, that's secondary, but first you've got to make a decision, but you don't have data or details to make a decision. That's the major challenge I face. And that's where I come back again to my point, is that whatever details you have, don't look for perfection, because perfection can kill patience. It's better to make a decision and then start working on it, immediately trying to get as much data or details you can. And your decision would be also who's going to collect the data and details, because now you still got to make a decision. So start working on that plan, is that get data and details as quick as you can while you're making your decisions. And that's because once you have data and details, everyone can make a decision quick enough and perfect enough. But that teaches you flexibility.
Yeah.
And that teaches you handling emergency situation. And sometimes, as I know, Garland has to deal with so many situations at the same time. Okay. And he's struggling for data and details to make decisions. That's his life. He makes decisions and then improves upon it while waiting on the data. So, and that's where your subject matter expertise comes in. You should be aware of your data and details. Okay.
I love
because
that.
Because you're a leader taking care of crisis.
I really like, I wrote down here that everyone can make the right decision. I mean, not the right one, but they can make a decision when they have all the details and all the facts. That's not what we're talking about. Right? We're talking about the tremendous skill set that one must have to make a decision when you don't have all the necessary information you need to make the decision, and time is of the essence. Right? And so I really like that you're pointing out, look, you're no different from everybody else when you get all the details to make a decision. Garland, what do you want to add to that?
A lot of the times we rarely have all of the information that we need. And a lot of times we make the decisions on the spur of a moment or within a few minutes. And, you know, we just want a little bit of information we have. You trust your instincts. You trust your experience. I mean, you trust your experience a great deal and you trust your instincts. if you do those, then you may make the wrong decision, but it'll be rare. Your instincts and your past experience are going to get you headed in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, I love that. Even Guru said it, you said it, like, okay, you don't need to be going in someone else's field and making decisions for them when you're not the subject matter expert in that field, right? Okay. And I call those astronauts. They think they've been everywhere and seen everything. You know what I'm saying? So let's be very clear here. What he's saying is, if you're an expert or a subject matter expert, if that's your field, that's when you make decisions. I'm not going to walk into an ER this afternoon and start making decisions for the med team on surgeries, right? So that's one. You have to be an expert in your field. And then I really do like that you guys keep pointing out, you're never going to have all the information that you need. That's why these guys are muddy. You hear what they're saying? A decision is not the option. You will make one. And you will make a mistake. That's where experience comes in. And John Maxwell calls that failing forward, right? You fail forward. We make a mistake, we pick it up, and we move forward. All right, Chris, I know I see it in your eyes. Anything you want to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just remember, I mean, when I was new into leadership, I had to go through a pretty significant a workforce reduction. About 15% of the staff. And I thought that I had handled it well with, you know, clear communication, severance packages, you know, dignity in the process. And then 2 weeks later, one of my leaders who reported to me kind of walked in and basically said, you know, I don't think I can trust you. And I'm not sure we can keep, you know, working here. And I said, what do you mean? I mean, and it was a gut punch. And this wasn't somebody who was a complainer. This was like my A-team. And to him, he had just kind of like lost faith in leadership because of how I handled the aftermath. And it turns out that I'd been so focused on the financial implications and the legal compliance that I ignored the human wreckage left behind. And there were survivors who were traumatized, right? And it's like I'm walking into this, you know, getting back to business. You know, we got to focus on metrics and KPI, that you have to remember that you have to have the human element. There has to be empathy in everything that you do. And essentially what I did is I just sat there and had all of our leadership come in and just sit and listen for 90 minutes and do something for me, which is tough, which is shut up. And really just, you know, put my listening ears on and say, go ahead. I didn't defend myself. I didn't explain my reasoning. I just took notes and let them unload. And I think when you can do that, you can, again, build trust, build credibility. But all of those things go into decision-making process, prioritizing, and then how you become more effective in leadership overall. So it's a tough lesson to learn, but yeah, you add it to your tool belt and it allows you to grow. So
that's that experience that Garland was talking about exactly. For your next go. Okay, well, I'm glad that this question, I'm going to gear it to you, Chris, because you kind of were leading into that a little bit. But during high pressure moments, teams often look to direction and reassurance. You know, people get nervous. They get scared, like for themselves, right? So how do you communicate with your team in a way that keeps them all aligned and confident, you know, and not just running for the hills? So tell me what that's like for Chris.
So again, this goes back, and I promise I won't do any Top Gun allergies or anything. So sorry, Melissa, but it goes back to being on that plane and the captain saying, you know, put your mask on first. You know, you have to get things in your own head before you start talking to anyone else. And I tell my leaders all the time, you know, your job isn't to have all the answers in the first 5 minutes of a crisis. It's to stay steady, you know, be in the game, be involved. You know, you can talk to people in a way and say, in a calm manner, here's what we know. Here's what we don't, and here's what we're going to do in the next 30 minutes. And it's not pretending you know everything. You can admit that you may not have an answer at that specific time. That's okay. It's showing that you're in control of the process. You even know that the outcome is uncertain. But you have to think of it as almost being in a firefight. You know, your team doesn't need to predict where every bullet is going. You need to say we're moving in that right position, covering each other, and we're kind of regrouping as we go. It has to be clear. Has to be decisive, and it has to be repeatable. So You know, think about flying on a plane as well with the air traffic controller. If there's a crisis, the air traffic controller isn't telling the pilot, well, you know, you're screwed. You're not going to make it, right? I mean, they don't overwhelm them with information. It's very short, deliberate, turn right, do this, do that. And that's how you have to be in your leadership style. You can't run out and get in front of your team and say, you know, the building's on fire, unless, of course, it is. But you know what I mean.
Right. I think that's so powerful. To just kind of add to that one just a little bit, the opposite of that, some leaders, because they don't know how, they don't want to communicate something wrong. They don't know enough information to communicate. So they just don't communicate. Like they're like, we don't know what to say. We don't have the answer, so we don't say it. But people fill the gaps in.
No, you're right. And what you can't do is you can't go radio silent. Silence is deafening. You have to communicate. You can't fake that you have all the answers. You know, your people aren't dumb. They can smell BS from a mile away, and you'll lose credibility if you promise outcomes that you can't deliver on. And the last thing is, and you know, there's kind of every once in a while there's this, you know, survivor, we voted as a group type thing. And no, there's no consensus. I mean, you have to own your decision. You have to stand in front of people and say, this was the decision. It was my decision. And you have to practice extreme ownership.
Oh, that's fabulous. All right, Garland, we're going to you because I know you're putting out fires as this goes. Thank you, Chris. That is powerful. And that is giving us direction in a crisis. All right, Garland. When there's a crisis, you already know it, it exposes weaknesses in systems and in leadership structures. What lessons has Garland learned about preparation and adaptability in your experience?
Every crisis that we have, I back up and look at how could we have been better prepared? What should we have known? Was this something that we could have saw coming? For instance, and you hear this a lot of times about hurricanes and a hurricane, you know, 2 weeks ahead of time, that thing is coming. You can prepare for it. You know what to do, when to do it, how to do it. A tornado, you have minutes, seconds to prepare. So you always stay prepared for both. And from an IT perspective, and you know, we always try to stay prepared for everything. And Guru and I have had multiple conversations on this. What can we do? What do we have to where that we see things coming? We've headed a lot of that off over the past few years. We've put systems in place that tell us this happened, this happened, this happened at a certain time. Say, for instance, I don't know if any of you saw it, but Monday, Exec VPN one just dropped mid morning. This morning, Exec VPN dropped again at about 8:30. I texted the team and I said, "Hey, this has happened twice. Go look at the data. What is the data telling us? What are we looking at? Is something coming? Can we go look at a piece of equipment? Can we look at a piece of software?" That's how we look at things. And I guess you would say crisis builds character. You have to adapt and you have to be able to handle it.
Yeah. What kind of person do you not want to work with? I know I like that you said crisis build character, but for Garland, since you have to deal with so many crises, and I could go, Guru could list them. And he could spend the rest of the podcast listening to the crisis that you guys, that you just listed Monday. You guys have been mud deep to your shoulder blades in Jamaica with Hurricane Melissa. That was not me. That was another Melissa. But what kind of person do you not want to work with, Garland, in a crisis? This wasn't one of my original questions, but I think that's important for those people, everyone listening. What kind of person does Garland not want to be in the mud puddle with when there's a crisis?
I don't want to work with someone that's pointing fingers and that's not going to do anything. If there's a crisis, it doesn't matter if it's your wheelhouse. What can I do to help? I know very little about how operations work, but in an operational crisis, I'm going to ask Chris, and I have, what can I do to help? How can IT help you? What can we do to help this? can we see this coming? Is there something that we can pull a report on or set a trend up? You know, Guru and I have talked trends for how many years, Guru? 5 that we've talked about trends, you know, but I don't want to work with somebody going to go, well, it's you, it's on you, it's on you, it's on you. Because I tell people I don't point fingers. Because if you're pointing a finger, you got 3 pointing back at you. And if there's a problem, I'm going to get in and I'm going to help. If I have to take my boots off and get in barefoot, I'm going to get in and help. We will figure it out. We will sort out the issue. We will fix it.
Very good. Guru, what kind of person do you not want to work with in a crisis?
A similar explanation, what Garland says, I would not want to work with a person who does not have the will. All the others could be taken care of, but if a person does not have the will to be a part of that team, to be part of that solution, or to work hard or to be flexible, then no matter how hard you try and make decisions, that person is never going to be a part of your solution.
Yeah.
And that puts me into an explanation which I would want to make clear is that every crisis has a lot of decisions to make. People think once the crisis is over, the job is done. No, the major job starts after the crisis is over. Please analyze, make decisions which would prepare you or even avoid the next crisis. You'll never be able to avoid crisis, but your job should always be try to reduce or even make sure that that crisis doesn't happen again or twice. That will help you to make decisions, who's going to be part of your team the next crisis, what's going to be a decision on the root cause of that person to improve, help, support, or remove. So it's very important a post-analysis is done after the crisis and you make decisions. Don't leave it for the next crisis and make decisions and make sure that those decisions are implemented. That's where you're preparing for your next crisis or even to how to handle them quicker. So
that's powerful. I love the way you said the crisis is, it begins when the crisis is over, right? This is why I like working with these guys. Chris, you have anything to add to someone that you don't like working with in a crisis?
Right. So you brought up the surgeon earlier, I think. And for me, it comes down to indecision. If that surgeon isn't confident enough to make the first incision, well, I don't know about any of you, but I don't want to be on that table, right? That's not an area that I want to be. So leadership is the same. Indecision is often more dangerous than an imperfect decision. And I think we need to, in addition to the will that Guru talked about and the finger pointing, for me, the indecision just slows things down and makes you stall. And we can't have that happen.
That's perfect. I got one for you guys. I don't like to work with heroes. Hero mentality. You know what I'm saying? Y'all know where I see Garland, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't like to be in a crisis with someone that, oh, that was my idea. Oh, here, I'm coming up with this, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing this. I don't need to work with a hero because heroes make a multitude of mistakes and people die in crisis, and then they want credit for what went well. Then they start pointing fingers, like Garland said, to the things that didn't go well. And to Guru's point, is they don't even have the will. They have self-will to be there. There's a difference between a will of the team and self-will to be there. Okay, last question. I know you guys have fires to fight and do all sorts of stuff, but we've got existing leaders listening to us today. We're trying to get as many listeners as a lady by the name of Brenda Gant. She makes biscuits and she has 3 million viewers. So we're trying to get 3 million viewers. So with that means that we're going to have leaders that have experience like you gentlemen, don't have leader experience in this field, are in a crisis now, just came out of one and maybe they stunk at it or they're about to get ready to go to one. If you're mentoring a leader today, what advice would you give them about making tough calls when the stakes are so, so high? All right. So Chris, we'll go with you. Then we'll go with Garland. Then we'll finish with Guru.
So Melissa, what I tell every new leader that I mentor is that the difference between senior leadership and every other leader isn't that we make perfect decisions, it's that we just make a decision, period. I think Guru was even hitting on this a little bit earlier, and we have to make them with incomplete information because complete information, it just doesn't exist. I learned this the hard way in my career. I delayed a termination on someone for 6 weeks because I wanted to be absolutely sure I knew everything that was going to happen. You know, this person's performance ended up getting worse, team morale tanked, and I almost lost three good people because it looked to them that I didn't care about standards. And these are the things that you learn. So my framework is if you have 60 to 70% of the information, 70 and go, waiting any longer will materially improve that. You just pull the trigger. And you know, you have to understand that people respect leaders who might be wrong more than they respect indecisive leaders who are waiting to be right. And I think as teams, a team can execute a B plus decision with your commitment better than they can execute an A plus decision if they don't believe in it. So,
that's powerful. And I'm glad you were listening to 70 ago. See, we all learned something, right? We learned something 70 ago. Some people need to get 70 before they go, you know, those type of people. All right, Garland, what would you, if you're mentoring a leader today, what would you say?
The first thing I'm going to tell them is to stop and think about it and take a deep breath. Stop and pause for 10 seconds. Look at the situation, take a deep breath, think about the situation, and then formalize your path, your best answer, your best decision.
That's perfect. That's responding versus reacting. Man, you know what, Garland? If our mouth would listen to our brain sometimes, it sure would keep us out of a lot of trouble. Because sometimes our mouth doesn't pause. And if we would have listened, took that 10 seconds, it would have kept ourselves out of a lot of trouble.
Yes.
Guru, what advice do you give?
I would advise a person is that if you're making a decision on crisis, the first thing is own the crisis, own the problem, be accountable for it. So what's that's going to do to you? Once you own it, you're the owner of that process, that event, that company, that financial budget thing. But once you own it, you remove all the layers. Layers means I'm still a junior level leader. He or she is a senior level department head leader. You see, all those layers are removed, and then you make decisions because you think I am responsible, accountable to sort this out, and you start make decisions on that. So stop relying on anyone else, but you own the problem, and then you start make decisions. Now, you may request help, support, resources from a senior leader or a senior leader's department head, but you own it, so you're not worried about or waiting on anyone. You see, crisis does not allow anyone to wait on anything. That's the first thing as a leader you should know is that I'm in charge, I'm going to take control. So take control. Don't worry about anything.
Oh, that's, you know what? What you guys are saying, you're giving business advice, but honestly, you lead your families too. And I know you personally, all three of you, you take that same mindset in your family. So if you're listening today, and I know you're part of a family, all these concepts work just the same for a family. I am honored to work alongside Chris, Garland, and Guru. This is kind of giving you some insights of how ETEC and ETS Labs make decisions through crisis and how we operate. And my job here is to learn, and I've learned so much today. And I'd like to leave you with something, the three of you gentlemen and those of you listening. When I travel, I like to take the toll. Do you guys take the toll? You know, because it gets you there faster. It may cost you a little extra money, but I take the toll, right? But I have to pay the toll. Okay? So I want to leave you with this. There's two tolls that you must pay in a crisis. Would you like to know the tolls?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every toll. I'm going to remind you three today of this and everyone else listening. There's two tolls that you must be paying attention to in every crisis. The toll number one is the toll it takes on me, on you. Let me stop there. I think that when you are in crisis mode, especially my gifted leaders in this area that have experience that do it all the time, like you, you don't pay attention to the toll it takes on you in a crisis. My husband used to have a lot of seizures, right? And that was a crisis. I'd have to like give him CPR or call the ambulance, and I stayed cool and calm. In a crisis, I'm cool and calm. But it would be like 2 or 3 days later, I would find myself getting very irritated, emotional, and sometimes I would cry and break down for no reason, like shut my dress in the door. Like, you understand what I'm saying? I didn't pay attention to that toll I was going to have to pay, because there's a toll it takes on us, your personal health. So pay attention to that toll. You've got to pay that toll. Okay? You could get physically ill. You can show all sorts of signs, but there's a toll it takes on you. The second toll you must pay, that you must pay attention to, is the toll it takes on other leaders. You know how that group that gets with you and they get in the crisis and they start, and then Guru said, you actually have to, it starts after the crisis is over. Well, those two tolls come up and they're due. Those two tolls will come up every time and they're due. The toll it takes on you and the toll it takes on others. And if you don't pay the actual toll bill, it doubles. Have you noticed that? Like, I didn't pay that toll bill. I ended up paying like $150 for a $3 ticket. The same thing goes in leadership. You don't pay attention to those two tolls and you don't pay attention. Are y'all watching me?
Great advice.
It will multiply and it will cost you greater than it would have if you paid it from the beginning. So thank you for walking through the mud with me today. Thank you for being on eTech Muddy Boots. You are valued and appreciated for stomping through the mud. And for those of you that kind of keep your shoes clean and you like to walk on the concrete and make those decisions, hopefully this, you staying by and listening to this today, will help you understand that the decision has to be made. It's going to be made with or without you. So see you next time on eTech Muddy Boots.
Thank you.
Thank you.